back on the pod. Great to have you here as ever.
Thank you. I mean, it's been a long time. I feel like our podcasts together come in waves. We'll go like a long time, and then maybe we're going to hit like two or three in a month or two. I was hoping to kind of chat with you more during the derby, but I was away and it was kind of tough. But always a pleasure to be on the Into the Calderon podcast, Jeremy.
Well, it is great to have you here, Keon. And we do have a few things to discuss as the international break comes to an end. Yes, it is almost over, finally. Atleti are back in action Saturday, and Real Madrid are as well. They are playing Mallorca. Atletico are home to Valencia. We'll preview those games a little bit toward the end of the program. But let's start with kind of the late breaking news here on Wednesday, entering Thursday in Spain. Villarreal's president announcing that his club and Atletico are in agreement to play a league fixture in Miami on December 8th. This is pending La Liga's approval, of course, but the clubs are apparently down for it. What's your instant reaction to that, Keon?
I guess surprised that both teams seem to be down for it. I imagine, like, in these cases, I always think about, like, how the smaller club, quote-unquote, feels about it. In this case, Villarreal, not a small club per se, but relative to Atleti and also just the context of how they've been the last few years. There's always, I think if it benefits them financially, they're probably more open to it than maybe the big clubs are, who are competing for so much and they want to rest and they don't want to travel long distances in the middle of the season, because the advantage is to the people, to teams who don't have to travel and they can just stay home and rest. And as we know, and I was kind of vocal about this on Twitter today, I just feel like we have so much football all year round that there is no off season anymore. It's just like, the season, in between the season, you have like a million international breaks, constant traveling around the world. When that ends, you have preseason, you know, and this is also just came up on the Managing Madrid podcast yesterday. The fact that Ramos wants to play Olympics, which you look at his season, it ends in May, Euros in June, Olympics July, and then the season starts in August. I'm just like, it's so much. To have to travel to the States in the middle of this in the season seems a lot to me, but I think it might be more appealing to Villarreal, who which game is that? Is that the home game at the Wanda or the away game for you?
That's the away game for Atleti.
That's the away game. So Villarreal, I'm assuming they lose the ticket sales, but make more by, you know, just they're compensated even better the other way. So
yeah,
I guess I think from a financial perspective, it might appeal more to a smaller club. How do you feel about it as an Atleti fan?
I think the novelty, like I thought last year when Barcelona and Girona nearly played that game in Miami, I think the novelty of it is fascinating. Logistically, it could be a bit of a nightmare of forcing the clubs to travel. And this is right before a Champions League game for Atletico, too. This is the weekend before they play the final group game, I think. I could have my weeks mixed up there, but I'm pretty sure the next week they play the final group stage match. Either way, I think logistically, travel-wise, it could be a nightmare, because you travel to the U.S., then you come back to Spain or wherever you're going next. Financially, it has to be appealing to Villarreal like it was to Girona, not so much for Barcelona or Atletico, because they already make a lot in ticket sales. They're already two of the three biggest teams in Spain. It's very interesting, and I'm not sure how badly I would like for it to happen. I'll have to think about it a little bit more. I think the idea from La Liga is, I'm a little softer on it than a lot of other writers and fans are. I'm a lot more softer on that idea, because there are some people who are like nearly militant about not playing a game in Miami. Like, La Liga games have to be played in Spain. And I get that viewpoint. But I think it is very interesting, even if the motivations are almost purely financial. I think it would be really interesting. Just the biggest concern is the travel, and the biggest concern is looking toward the week after and the week after that. And plus, later in that month, the Atleti are going to be playing in the Spanish Super Cup, and that is supposed to be held in Saudi Arabia. Whether it will be is another story, but that is allegedly where it's going to be held. So it's just a lot of travel.
Yeah, I'm like you, I'm less militant about it as some others. I know, like, you know, Ray Hudson caught me off guard, because he was like so stoked about the idea of having La Liga games in the States throughout the season. There is that perspective of people who are in the States also who will just feel more connected to it. But as a Real Madrid fan, I don't want any traveling during the season. Minimize it. I don't I don't have any interest in seeing Real Madrid play in the States or Canada or wherever, even if it's like in my backyard. I don't really want that, because I just want what's best for the team. But I do wonder, like, what's the limit here? Because I just feel like there's so much money involved now that we're going to start turning the wrong way and start ignoring sports science and what the doctors are saying, and kind of the idea of rest and not playing too much and kind of recuperation and stuff and recovery. You throw enough money into everybody's face, and I don't know, I'm just kind of worried about it. It could be the States this year, and then next year we could go start having games in Japan and Australia. I mean, it's not off the table really, but I just think at some point we have to just step in and be like, okay, like, I think we're rich enough. Let's focus on a deep Champions League run. We'll get compensated that way. I just feel like I'm worried about the limits and what the limits will be, basically, for stuff like this.
Yeah, where is it going to end? And injuries, as you intimated earlier, injuries may just keep piling up. I mean, these are a lot of games and a lot of miles these teams and these players are traveling. So you do really have to wonder, where does it all end? And where does the financial windfall not become such a major part of this? I don't know. Really, who knows? I never thought, you know, 2-3 years ago, or even when I started intensely following La Liga several years ago, that this would ever happen, that games would be held in Miami, or that Atletico would ever be a part of them. So from that standpoint, it's really interesting and intriguing, and we're going to be monitoring it. But this is kind of symptomatic of a larger issue, a larger debate. Where is this going to end, and where are they going to go next? Like, what exotic location are La Liga, or, you know, other bodies in UEFA, where are they going to go next? So it's worth keeping an eye on it. And for Real Madrid as well, as the past few years, you guys have had the Intercontinental Cup, or the Club World Cup, as it's now known. So talk about exotic locations.
Yeah. And that stupid tournament is, for me, one of the reasons why it's so hard to repeat as a Champions League back-to-back. I know they've done it 3 years in a row, or they did, before they got knocked out last year. But I really feel like that's one of the hindrances in why we haven't seen a team repeat really since Milan in the 80s, is because you have to travel this to the far ends of the earth to play against opponents that are good but not the level that you want to be playing against. And in the end, no one actually remembers if you won that or not. So it doesn't matter if you're out. Doesn't matter if you win. No one really remembers it. And I think it's a thorn in the race to defend your title, because you have this disadvantage all of a sudden that your opponents don't have. And I just think I don't see it being scrapped, but I think there's a case to be made for at least to revisit how it's done, and maybe at least have it done. Maybe the benefit of the European champion is that they get to host the whole thing in their country or something, so that it's minimized traveling. But I don't know, it's one of those things that I also think it's just too much football on top of too much football.
It just is unnecessary. And a lot of times, like, that's one of the trophies where you'd have to go on Wikipedia to see how many times your team has won it. Well, it's a minor trophy. There's novelty to it, but kind of the logistics kind of overrides the necessity of playing those two games in, you know, really in the winter break, which is when guys really need to rest and recuperate as much as they can before things ramp up again in January. Interesting stuff. More interesting stuff came out on Wednesday with the possibility, however remote it may be, that the Clásico next weekend would be moved from Camp Nou to the Bernabeu, Keon. That's an interesting one, isn't it?
It's interesting. My initial reaction when I first saw it, I saw El País had written about it, and I clicked on it and I read it. But my initial reaction was that there's no way this is going to happen. There's just no way. And I think ultimately, I think it's going to be proven true that it's not going to happen, because both Barcelona and Real Madrid rejected the idea. It seems like the idea has been rejected enough. I don't know if it's been officially rejected by the federation when the league proposed it, but the clubs have definitely rejected it. And I think what's going to happen is that it's just going to go ahead at the Camp Nou with heightened security and some extra tension, And there was another proposal I saw today, not long before we started recording, that possibly they might push it to December. But I also think it's just going to go ahead in October, and it's just going to be at the Camp Nou, and then it'll blow over. Not to minimize what's happening in Catalonia and Spain. Obviously, it's a very serious issue, but
yeah.
I think just from the reality of what's going to happen, I think it's probably just going to go ahead at the Camp Nou. And I don't think anyone, neither club nor sets of fans, really want it to be changed.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. Just a lot of souped-up security. And I think the match will probably go off without a hitch. But, you know, there has been, you know, three nights of violence, really, in Catalonia, in Barcelona, because of the separatism issue and the jailing of these separatists. It's kind of a cauldron right now. And understandably, there are security concerns. But, you know, a lot of times we've had this, it's not an issue, but a lot of times we've had this pop up in Catalonia with the issue of separatism and the political complexities intertwined within it. This is not a political podcast, so I'm not going to take a stand one way or the other, but the match will probably go off without a hitch. The concerns, I think, are well-founded to a degree, but things will be fine, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty much where you are right now with that.
So that is, yeah, it's not going to be moved to December either. Just, again, with the logistics. La Liga doesn't always understand the logistics.
The biggest logistics being, obviously, with the thousands of fans who have already bought tickets to the city of Barcelona.
Right,
There's nothing the league is going to do about that to compensate them. I'm pretty sure of that.
Yeah, probably not.
So I don't think they care. So that's a huge thing to consider.
Yeah, pretty much just overhauling, you know, all the tickets and plans to get a hotel and food and everything. It's just completely decimating someone's budget. So I would be absolutely shocked if anything came of that. And both clubs have rejected it out of hand. So that is expected to go ahead next weekend. But I mean, we get to this weekend, and Atleti have a big game at home against Valencia. Just about everyone is back for Atleti. Stefan Savic is the only casualty of the international break. He has a hamstring injury that he sustained on duty with Montenegro. The club has not announced the timetable yet for his return. I'm guessing he's going to be out a couple weeks, though. Savic and Vitolo are the only injuries that Letty have. Vitolo might be back this weekend after his own hamstring injury. For Real Madrid, Keon, Gareth Bale and Luka Modric both kind of had issues over the break in the last week. What's the latest on them? How are they doing?
I think they're doing much better than we thought, because when I watching that Croatia-Wales game was a bit traumatizing towards the end, because there's this entire stretch at the end with like 2 minutes to go in regular time, like 89th minute I believe it was. Modric goes in for a challenge, he gets injured in the process, gets subbed off, and then you see Bale limping like heavily to the point where actually he can't really even move around the pitch, and Wales had already made their three subs, and he's limping around. He's just basically a pine cone, and they can't do anything about it. So they just put him at the top of the pitch, and just he's a corpse standing there. So that was a freakishly horrific, like 2-3 minute sequence for Real Madrid fans to have to endure on a team that's already been relentlessly hammered with injuries. Modric seems like he'll be back in time for the Clásico. Bale, according to Ryan Giggs, it was just a cramp and nothing more. Now, that's like still a worrying cramp to me, where what happens to a professional footballer who's like in tip-top shape that just cramps up like that. But it seems like it's not as bad as we thought. So that's good. I guess more interesting, Jeremy, is how Zidane ends up juggling the next three games, because we have Mallorca without Kroos, without Modric, which means probably time for James and Isco and Fede Valverde. The tricky thing is, I think, with Casemiro, he's already played virtually almost every second, both for Brazil and Real Madrid this season. At some point, he's going to burn out. And you have two games coming up that you have to play him back-to-back in, because literally they're too important, because Galatasaray, you have to win that game, otherwise your season's on the line in Europe already. And Barcelona, you obviously have to win because it's Barcelona. And so that means if you don't rest him against Mallorca, he's never going to rest pretty much until November. And then he's going to go off to international duty again. But if you do rest him, that means you have no real defensive midfielder or central midfielder to play behind James and Isco, or however Zidane decides to line it up. So it's going to be a tricky one to juggle, a tricky upcoming schedule. And I think that Mallorca game might be a banana peel we really didn't expect, but it's going to be tricky because of the injuries and I don't know. I guess the alternative is you just play Casemiro and you bite the bullet and he's just going to play nonstop.
Which, ideally, you don't want to do, because Casemiro is the only player in that team who really does what he does. That's what makes him so incredibly essential for Madrid. That Mallorca game could be a tricky one at San Moix, which is a difficult place to play. Atleti only went there a couple weeks ago and got their first win in almost a decade there. After, I think, failing to win the previous nine, they finally got a win. So it can be a tricky place to go. It can be a tricky place to go. An Isco sighting, though, that's interesting. Haven't kind of seen him in a while. So we'll see how he gets on and how he does. Atleti's international break, relatively successful. Saul and Spain qualified for the Euros. Let's talk a little bit about Spain and what's going on with them. Two relatively uninspiring 1-1 draws against Norway in Oslo and Sweden in Stockholm, Kian.
Yeah, I don't know how you feel. I'd be interested to know what are you thinking about the Spain team right now. But I'm worried because, on one hand, you can also chalk up these last two games to they were pretty much qualified. I mean, they weren't mathematically qualified, but they pretty much were. And that late goal against help me out. What was the last game?
It was Sweden.
Sweden. That late goal against Sweden sealed the deal. But so I guess you can put that into context, like maybe the team like switched off, and also Roberto Moreno was experimenting. He put two different lineups out, as you know, also because Saul played the first game against Norway but not the game against Sweden. But part of me thinks that this team is lacking in two major areas that I really worry about. One, they clearly have no clinical goal scorer. When Morata plays well, that changes things, obviously, but I'm not sure what version of Morata you get, and I think relying on him is a bit risky. On the other hand, who do you rely on? Gerard Moreno, actually, I thought looked good against Sweden, although he didn't score. He got into good positions and got some good headers on the ball. Still no signing of Iñaki, who I think actually would help this team quite a bit, because he brings a certain new element to the team, and that is like very, very direct football, who can kind of get in behind the defensive line. I don't worry about the midfield much. Like, I honestly think Thiago's a genius on his day, although he had one huge brain fart against Sweden where he should have scored, or at least squared it to an open player.
Yeah.
I think Fabian Ruiz is a genius.
He's brilliant.
I think Saul is awesome, like, on both ends of the field. I think Ceballos brings a lot of good energy. I think their midfield is fine. And Rodri also, great. I just don't know who's going to score, and I also have no idea who's going to partner Ramos. Like, that really worries me. I'm not huge on Diego Llorente as others are. I don't know who that partner is. I'm not looking forward to Albiol, if that's who it's going to be. Iñigo's good. I just kind of worry about that position. And also Mario Hermoso, I'm not sure, is that elite partner either. And the other one is, like, if you told me, Jeremy, like, I don't know, 3 years ago, or even, I don't know, give or take a few years, that Spain would be starting Jesus Navas and Albiol in a game, I'd think you're crazy. I don't know where, like, how that happened. I guess Navas has been good, so there's that. But there's just a few things about this Spain team that worry me, that's all.
Yeah, Jesus Navas has found the fountain of youth, man. He's been great.
Yeah, he's been good. It's hard for me to knock him, actually. But I just feel like it's just kind of like this weird thing that I'm just not sure how this team will look.
I think Iñigo might be Ramos' partner. I think he's probably the best option. I mean, Hermoso has barely played for Atleti this year. Talented as he is, he's just not in Cholo's plans right now. I still think by the end of the season, Jimenez and Hermoso will be Atleti's central defense pairing. But that is a tricky one. Mm-hmm. Who on earth is going to partner Sergio Ramos, who passed Iker Casillas for the all-time appearances, on the all-time appearances register for Spain, which is pretty damn impressive. I think it'll be Iñigo. I think he's probably the best option. I mean, Albiol just has never really convinced me. And he's getting up there in age as well. Iñigo is kind of one of the future pillars of this Spanish back line, I think. And he's still pretty young. I think it's got to be him. You would think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I guess Iñigo out of all the whole crop would give me more confidence. I'm actually, like, I'm also, like, I would love to see, instead of Albiol, I'd love to see Yeray and Unai Nunez and these guys
get a run.
Because
yes.
I think, like, you know, kind of get them into the mix. Even Bartra, I'd rather see over Albiol. But I'm just not sure how Albiol got here all of a sudden. I mean, I understand he was good with Napoli, and now he's back in the league. So, like, there's, I guess, some stuff. But I don't know. I just kind of trust, I would rather go the other way and go for the really young players and trying to get them into the mix.
Yeah, Athletic are just stocking
also,
up on
like,
these
really... Also, like, if Vallejo was playing more, maybe that would help. But he's not playing at the club level, so I understand you can't really bring him up in Raw like this.
Yeah, I really haven't heard much about Vallejo, come to think of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just hasn't been playing with Wolves, that's it. He played once where they got destroyed by Chelsea, and he did not have a good game, and then we haven't really seen him since.
And that was that. That's unfortunate for him, because he still has all that promise, just... some difficult circumstances, particularly with his fitness. Spain's midfield, I think, is more than fine. You look at all the options that Moreno has in midfield. It's just really scary. Busquets is still pretty good, too, but Rodri is overtaking him, really, as we speak. Fabian is just a brilliant player. Really has taken it up another notch since he joined Napoli. We mentioned Ceballos. Thiago has been a fixture when fit in this team. Saul, I don't think Koke will be in the team at the Euros, but he hasn't really been in Moreno's plans, but, you know, Koke could
you don't think he makes his squad even?
I don't think he makes the Euros squad. No, with all the options in midfield, wow. I'm not sure he does. Moreno hasn't really counted on him.
I guess the other two to mention that I think have been forgotten about, that I think bring actually a lot of good offensive energy, one is Isco. Who, for various reasons, going back to Solari, who hated him, and then he comes back, and then he's injured. We haven't really seen him consistently for those reasons, but if he comes back and he plays well under Zidane, which is, as of now, we have no idea, but if he does, that's one piece for sure. And the other one is Asensio, who, can't forget, has been really good for Spain when he's played. We also have no idea how he's going to look when he comes back in the winter sometime. So those are two names that I think can be like X factors and maybe get this team a little bit more piercing offensively. So there's like, I guess, that to consider as well.
Yeah, kind of making our way toward the forwards. Maybe Iago Aspas gets back into contention. He and Celta need to improve, I think, massively over the next few weeks and few months here, but maybe Iago Aspas is someone who gets back into Moreno's plans. Iñaki is a really interesting shot. He has never been capped, has he, for the national team?
I don't think so, and every time I'm surprised, because he's had a great year.
He would be the fastest player in this team.
Yeah, I think he brings something really valuable. I'm surprised that he hasn't been looked at.
Yeah, his speed alone, not the best of finishers, but his speed alone and his directness would really offer Moreno a nice quality. But Spain do have a few forwards to choose from. Rodrigo has been brilliant this year for Spain. A bit inconsistent at Valencia at league level, but he has been excellent for the national team. Scored the equalizer against Sweden. His ability to just link play and himself play as a number 9 is just really valuable. I don't think there's any way he's not in the squad of the Euros, and he's quickly become kind of a focal point. The Spain, their problem is that they really just lack a finisher. They really just lack that reference point. So maybe it can be Morata, but Morata does have these patches where he goes really dry and he just misses headers. He just doesn't get too involved. Obviously, that is heightened by what's going on with Atletico's attack right now. But there have been times in the past where Morata's been really up and down. If he's up, though, he will be a great reference point for this team.
Yeah. Just to backtrack for a second, Iñaki has one cap.
One cap.
he played against Bosnia and Herzegovina in 2016, I believe.
Wow.
Around there, I think, yeah. And that was it.
It's surprising.
It's surprising. And yeah. Like you mentioned, I also think, I think his finishing is looks a little bit better to me this season. Anyways, I feel like it's must be a matter of time. It has to be, right? I think he's too good to ignore. I really hope he plays himself into the team by the Euros, because I really think he's an asset that's worth looking at.
Oh, he's a beast, and he's gotten off to a good start this year. Athletic's results have kind of fallen off the past few weeks, but Iñaki's off to a good start. Yeah. He's really kind of embracing that number 9 shirt. Especially under Garitano, things have gone a lot better for him. So he's off to a good start this season, perhaps trying to throw his hat into the ring. But Spain, their performances overall just haven't inspired a ton of confidence. They've been impressive at times, but there have also been instances where they played kind of poorly. And how would you assess their chances at the Euros right now?
I think their ceiling is a semifinal appearance.
Mm.
I'm trying to even think of, like, I guess the last time I really felt inspired by a Spain performance was their win against Sweden earlier in the qualifiers at home. Other than that, it's been kind of hit or miss. And part of the reason also is obviously because the team, I don't think Roberto Moreno knows what his starting lineup is yet, and players have been in and out of the squad. So you're yet to see, like, the final polished, like, 11. So that'll be interesting, you know, like, when rotations cease to exist and you have your full squad available, who's going to start? That'll be interesting. I think when you have all of the best players on the field, I think they can beat anyone in the world, even if it's like a France or a Belgium or a Portugal, one of those teams in that mold, or the Netherlands. I think on their day they can beat anyone. So I think they're like, I guess their ceiling is maybe higher than semifinal. Maybe it's the whole damn tournament. I just feel like there's holes in this team that will prevent them from getting there. Mainly that I think they'll have trouble breaking down teams when they get to the Euros, who are going to be really compact and play on the counter. I don't really trust their defending in transition. And I'm also not sure if the team will score goals with all the possessions they have. And I think you saw this against Norway too, like a version of it where they had so much of the ball and so many of these cute passing triangles between Ceballos and Fabian and Jesus Navas and all these guys, and it didn't really lead anywhere. And I think, I guess maybe semifinals is my prediction. But I wouldn't be surprised if they go further or if they get knocked out of it earlier. This is a terrible answer. I have no idea what to make of this team. I don't know.
I kind of feel the same way, though. I think they have a pretty high ceiling-to-floor ratio. I mean, I kind of think things could go the way of the World Cup last summer, where, especially against Russia, it was just criminal how Spain could not create anything over 120 minutes and then lost on penalties. I think it could kind of be the same deal. I don't really know how much Spain have improved since then. I think they may have a better squad, definitely a younger squad with players who have vastly improved and given them more energy, more vitality, but I don't really know what to expect. I think Spain could make a semifinal run. I think they totally can. I also think they could get knocked out in round of 16 again, like Italy did to them back in 2016, like Russia did at the World Cup. It is a matter of how Moreno is going to do in a major tournament. It's a matter of him getting his team together. Also has to figure out his striker, especially who his main striker or his pairing, however he wants to play it, you know, whoever is going to be up there, who his reference point is going to be, because that's everything for Spain. That's what got them knocked out in the World Cup last year and the Euros, the tournament before. It's going to be very interesting because this Spain team has, as usual, so much talent. It will be very curious to see how they finish out qualifying and how they get prepared for next summer when this crazy Euros tournament in 12 different cities, how that's going to come off.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see. And I hate international football, I'm also pretty excited for the Euros. And I'm excited for it, but... I'm very curious because I don't know exactly where they rank yet.
Could be great, could be not so great. We'll have to see. They don't play again for another month. They host Malta and then they host Romania. Those should both be wins. We'll see how convincing they are. And those performances, I wouldn't expect anything earth-shattering. Spain were already virtually in before they took the pitch against Norway. But thinking about your point that the last time Spain really impressed was against Sweden at the Bernabeu, and even then it took Spain over an hour to score, and then they got three goals in 20-something minutes. That was back in June. That's 4+ months ago. So Spain are kind of stuttering a bit. In a way, it's not surprising, but in a way, you can also draw a few concerns from it. So we'll see what the national team will get up to in the next month or so here as they round out qualifying and keep getting ready for the Euros. Let's go back to Spain, the country, the domestic league, and we'll talk about... I do want to talk about the league as a whole, these first 8 weeks of what has been a... So far, it's been awesome. La Liga has been awesome so far this year. We've had quite a few surprise players, a couple teams that have really gotten off to just amazing starts, Keon, and I've already seen a managerial sacking at Espanyol, so it's been a lot of fun. And even despite that, the top three are, well, the top three, Madrid, Barcelona, and Atletico, are 1, 2, and 3, respectively, despite all this, all the topsy-turviness of these first 8 match days.
Yeah, I think that the annoying thing about this as a Real Madrid fan, and that maybe you feel this way from your perspective too, I just feel annoyed that Real Madrid is the only team that's undefeated in the league and are 2 points ahead of Barcelona, who are supposedly having a terrible season, and Atletico Madrid, who have one win in the last 5 games and can't seem to score at all.
Literally.
They have 7 goals, and yet the margin between the 1, 2, and 3 is virtually zero. And that's annoying for me. And I think, like, for all this talk of, like, oh, Barcelona had their worst start in X amount of years, those 3 draws, the one against Atleti, fine. Like, I think that's a good result regardless, because it's away at the Wanda. Mm-hmm. The other two, the drop points against Valladolid and Villarreal, those two, especially the one against Valladolid at home, really hurt us, because all of a sudden we had this window that Messi was injured, Suarez was injured, Barcelona were terrible to start the season, and in the end it's 2 points, and you know that Clasico could swing it one way or the other, obviously, but the margin of error is almost nothing, and Atletico somehow are 3rd, 3 points back first place, even though they literally have, again, one win in 5 games. It's just unbelievable to me.
It's definitely a somehow. Atletico, as you said, 7 goals in 8 games. I said this on the last podcast we did, that it's basically unacceptable to score less than a goal per game when you have this array of attacking talent. And there are issues here with Atleti, and Simeone still trying to figure out what João Félix's best role is, trying to get really anything out of Diego Costa. One shot on target this season for Costa. He's completely out of the Spain plans because of what he's been up to for the past year. And he just turned 31. It doesn't seem like it's going to get much better for him. He's worked out the defense at least, so that's something. 5 straight clean sheets, which at the end of the day is what we know Simeone really wants. But 7 goals from 8, and to still be 3rd, that is an achievement. I'm not sure if it's positive or negative, but it is an achievement to just be 3 points.
It is a huge, huge testament to how good your defense is.
Yeah,
because you scored 7 goals in your 3rd place because you've only conceded 4. The only team to have conceded that amount has been Athletic, which is also impressive actually. Because actually, you know what's funny? This is interesting. You and Athletic both have 7 goals for and 4 against.
Yeah.
One lies 7th, one lies 3rd. then again, I mean, like, the standings are really tight still, and it's early on. So, but I just, that's an amazing testament to your defense. Are you surprised? Because after that preseason 7-3, and the, I guess, very early stages of the actual season, I thought Atletico were going to be much more attacking than years past, but that hasn't been the case. Are you surprised? Did you think this was going to be the year that you were going to be kind of a different brand of football?
I had hope, but at the end of the day, Simeone does not want to keep his teams that open. Atleti have not conceded in a month because they have really shut up shop in a way. There were a couple games, the Celta draw at home in particular, where Atletico had a ton of possession and chances just couldn't finish him. Those games happened. That was a really frustrating result, but those games happened. I did have some hope that Atleti would be able to score more than 58 goals this season. It doesn't look like that's going to happen as of now. Who knows? Atleti, I've kind of been saying this, they're still a bit of an enigma. We don't really know what they're going to be. What they are right now is pretty defensive, really struggling to click and attack. Simeone's already answering questions about João Félix and why he's not playing 90 minutes. You know, Costa is still starting. You have Saul still playing left back occasionally. There are issues here. But even then, Atleti haven't conceded in a month. And that is a positive. And the goals could start coming. Who knows? There is a lot of talent here, and it's very expensively assembled talent. So you'd think that raw talent at the end of the day would win out. But we've seen in the past this system occasionally shackle players with that kind of talent. We'll see if it happens again. Simeone had showed in preseason, and he has shown at times this season already, that he's willing to be a little more expansive, willing to be a little more confident and in charge of possession. And that is great. That's promising. But then you see the kind of this reversion to type, this reversion, this focus on defending and the focus on preventing goals rather than scoring them yourself. So from that vantage point, it's frustrating, but this was always going to kind of be a transitional year. This was always kind of going to be that season where Atleti could be great. They could also be not great and tough to watch. And that's kind of the valley that Atleti are in right now.
I thought it was, I was reading our mutual friend Robbie Dunn's article, obviously writes for Into the Calderon. In his last article, he had a chart with some data in it, and it showed that in the last 7 years, this is the most possession that Atleti have had in the last 7 years, and the least amount of shots per game. So that, I thought that was interesting. I didn't even think that was going to be a thing until I saw the chart. I was like, wow, so more of the ball and less efficiency. I thought that was interesting, at least.
Basically, yeah. So much of Atleti's play this season has gone through the fullbacks, Trippier and Lodgy, who have both been great. Trippier especially has been a big surprise. He's been awesome. And because of that, you're relying a lot on crossing, and crossing is a very fickle thing. It's usually inaccurate and doesn't lead to great opportunities. When you're relying that much on crossing and playmaking from the flanks, this is what can happen. You can't generate tons of opportunities. Atletico still have this blockage in the middle of the pitch. Atleti really could have used someone like, James Rodriguez to unlock something in the middle of the pitch.
Thank God. That didn't happen.
I bet you're happy.
I am. It's interesting, like, your point about the crosses too, because during the derby, I think most of the world was bored to death from that game. I think, like, me invested in it and being there, and any Atleti fan, any Ramja fan who had emotional investment in this game probably found it a bit more exciting. But
I did too.
Actually did enjoy it, but I thought it was at least amusing that both teams were trying to do the same thing, and that was get each other on the flanks and overloads and cross it. And it kind of just canceled each other out, and both teams were kind of just going on down the wings and trying to make something, but nothing was working. Obviously, like you said, it's, you know, it is the most improbable path to a goal from a statistical standpoint. And, I also think it's interesting. I mean, because during that preseason game, even though it was preseason, what I took away from it was that, man, João Félix can be so good in his passing down the middle and his movement. I guess I'm just surprised at how things just change in football so easily.
Yeah, he has been... Cholo is very clearly trying to make him understand that he needs to do defensive work for the team. And that's great. That's fine. The Lokomotiv Moscow game a couple weeks ago is a pretty good indication of this. The entire first half, João Félix spent it covering for Santillares on the right flank. Couldn't get forward at all. Yeah. Just spent the entire first half as defensive cover. The second half, 3 minutes in, he gets the opening goal. 10 minutes later, he sets up the second goal that kills the game. He's very, very good. He's very talented. He's a Golden Boy nominee, possibly a Ballon d'Or contender in a couple years. Possibly. It's clear that he's extremely skilled and wildly talented, but Simeone wants him to understand the value of defensive work, which is great, but also kind of boring, because we don't get to see the best version of João Félix that we saw in the preseason.
Maybe the solution is just to ask Thomas Partey to just shoot on sight from 40 yards every time he gets the ball.
I'm fine with that. He can do that. He's been great.
What is going on with Marcos Llorente? Can you explain something to me? Like, I know he's not playing. I know he's not lit the world on fire when he's played, but is there a case for him to play more? Because you know about it way more than I do. What's happening there?
Thomas Partey is what's happening to poor Marcos. Thomas has been in such good form. It's been tough for Marcos to get in the team.
And you don't really play with a pure traditional defensive midfielder. That's also why I thought Rodri just fits so much better at City now than he did at Atletico. But I guess if he wants to play, he has to play in a double pivot, right?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Just Cholo is not going to come out here and roll out a diamond. He did that a bit in training, and then the preseason has not done it yet, which is disappointing because that would have gotten the best out of Rodri. It didn't. I also think it can get the best out of Marcos Llorente. It hasn't so far. But Thomas's form has just been so good. He's been Atletico's best midfielder, and I don't think it's been close. That being said, Koke and Saul are undroppable. You can't drop Koke because he offers cohesion, and he's the captain. And Saul, Simeone will run him into the ground before he substitutes him. He has to play him at left back once a game. That's a requirement. It's got to be in his contract somewhere that Saul plays left back once a game. And yeah, you just can't drop him. So it's very tough for Marcos. But hopefully he
gets... For what it's worth, every time I see Saul playing a left back, I think he's like shutting down players. And actually he's good there. Maybe it's just he's just good everywhere. But I don't think it's obviously a strength, but... Well, I do find it amusing that he plays there so much. I think he looks good there from a defensive standpoint.
Defensively, yes, but it completely just inhibits anything that Atleti try to do from that flank.
Yeah.
But he is, it just shows again how freaking good Saul is, that Simeone can play him at left back and he can do a job defensively. Tell me about Fede Valverde. He's been one of my surprise players this season. I didn't think he'd be this influential over proceedings at Real Madrid, Keon.
No, neither did I. And I mean, I knew he was going to get a chance at some point because we let go of like 20 midfielders this season. Llorente, Kovacic, Ceballos. So there was always a chance that he was going to play. I mean, I knew he was going to play sporadically. I didn't know how much of an impact he was going to make. Turns out he covers an insane amount of ground. I'm actually working on an article about this, but And that's something that Zidane has mentioned in the post-game press conferences, that like his energy and the amount of ground he covers. Like, you'll see him, there was these crazy sequences against Granada at home the last match day where he was the deepest player on the pitch with the ball, like behind the central defenders. He'd pass it and then move into a run ahead of the striker and was all of a sudden the highest player on the pitch and receiving long balls into the box and then coming back within seconds and dispossessing players. Like, it's just crazy how much ground he covers. And while I think his passing and positioning, it needs some work a little bit, and you saw his passing kind of go wrong in the derby, although he did some other good things, I think his energy has been something that Zidane really likes and he's lauded it, because ever since that PSG game, all Zidane has talked about is intensity, intensity, intensity. I think there's like a real thing that matters to him about like just work your ass off, and Fede brings that. So he's been a great, great bright spot this season. I'm excited to see how he develops. It's interesting to see, you know, I guess just what he brings to the table. And I guess this is one of the benefits of like when you start getting thin in a single position, some of the winners of these scenarios are like the fringe players or the young players who are kind of thrown into this and they can show us something they couldn't before. We saw it with Vinicius last season, with Marcos Llorente last season, Reguilón last season. You can just, like, it's kind of cool just to see what you have. And Fede is one of those things that, you know, now we see him. Is there an urgent need, I guess, to look at other players in that position, or can you just continue developing him?
Regardless, he has been a bright spot, and he really is a bit of a switchblade in that midfield. Been very valuable so far, and I've been surprised watching him. As you said, he does run all the hard yards, and he does cover just a ton of ground, just so much distance. I think he was on one of the leaders in distance covered in the derby.
Yeah, he was really good. You saw it firsthand. I'd imagine that maybe that would hold up against Granada too. But I'm not sure. But, like, again, like Zidane, I think, used the word, like, the amount of pitch he covers or something like that is just crazy. So he just has this relentless motor off the ball that is valuable.
And Madrid unbeaten in 5 since that PSG disaster, though their Champions League prospects not looking great at the moment. You got to expect them to go through anyway, though. You just have to. That game at Galatasaray.
Yeah, on the one hand, 1 point from 2 games is not a good look at all, and it obviously is not. And you have a trip to Turkey coming up. You have to play PSG against. You have to go away to Bruges. Well, it wasn't easy at home. What makes you think it'll be easy away from home? On the other hand, unbelievable to say this, but that the fact that they managed to scrape a tie against Bruges kept them in the Champions League, in my opinion, because if they had lost that game, then they all of a sudden, Bruges go to 4 points. Now Bruges are on 2 points, I believe. And so it's almost like all you have to do is just these next 4 games. You win them, you'll be fine. You're probably not going to get first in the group, but you're going to qualify, I imagine, unless things really go wrong in Turkey.
For free.
And it's not out of the question either. I don't think it's going to be an easy game.
No, that'll be a tough one. You know,
yeah.
That will be tough, and we'll see what happens there. Atletico's Champions League prospects are a bit more secure, and they have Leverkusen next midweek. So kind of talking about La Liga a little bit more before we sign off. As a whole, we're talking about Valverde kind of segues into the biggest surprises of the season so far, Keon. The biggest surprise player, the biggest surprise team, perhaps the biggest dud so far. For me, the biggest surprise player, like barring Odegaard and Ansu Fati, is a good one.
Yeah.
Valverde is up there. Kimi Avila is up there for me. He's been great at Osasuna. He's been their best player. Aitor Fernandez as well at Levante. That is a Levante team that has a terrible defense, and he has been bailing them out almost every week. They're 10th. They're solid in the mid-table, doing things that they haven't seen in goal since Keylor Navas was there.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of surprises, you kind of, I guess, took the ones that I would have mentioned. I'm trying to think. I guess one, since Odegaard's the easy answer at Real Sociedad, you could name maybe a couple others that I think have been good. I suppose not necessarily surprises, but I think Oyarzabal has been a winner of Odegaard and the team because it's less burden on him offensively. And he's looked good. And so have their other pieces. I think they work well together in Porto and Januzaj. And even Isaac off the bench has looked pretty dangerous. Partey, can I put him as a surprise?
I think so.
We all knew he was good. He's taken an elite this season.
Yeah, he's playing at an insane level.
It's worth pointing out. Cucurella at Getafe. I want to give a shout out to him. I think he's been really good. Jean Jordan at Sevilla, great.
Really underrated. What is underrated when he was at Eibar?
Yeah, I thought so too. Fekir has been pretty good, although Betis haven't.
Lauren Moron has been great at Betis.
He has been good.
6 goals so far for him, but Betis are not so good. Ruby's kind of on the hot seat there, isn't he?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
There are things that I think surprised me the other way, that players or teams haven't been as good as I thought they would be. Leganés have been really disappointing.
Yes, they have.
This is a team kind of close to my heart because we cover them every week on the Loan Tracker since the beginning of last season because Oscar Rodriguez is there. And we were thoroughly impressed with him on the Managing Madrid podcast and the whole team as a whole, because Pellegrino is so good at organizing his teams defensively and punching above their weight, where this season they have yet they have yet to win. They have not won a game yet. They're the only team in the league hasn't won yet. And six losses, the most of any team in the league as well. Minus eight goal difference, 2 points. That's scary for them. It's hard to recover from, I think. Although, this is way too early to say anything, but I have been disappointed with them. Espanyol are just impossible to watch. I can't watch them. Unless I absolutely have to, like Real Madrid is playing against them, or the game is too big to ignore, like it's Barca versus Espanyol or Atleti, I can't do it. They're so boring. They're so uninspiring. I think Marc Roca is good. I just think outside of that, they have nothing going for them. The stadium is boring even. I don't know. What else? Who do you think?
Oh, Espanyol have been dreadful. Just look at what they've done at home. Yeah. Four losses, one goal scored at home. Yeah, they need Pablo Machin to save them. He's got to save them. No two ways about that. Celta have been a disappointment to me because I liked what they did over the summer. Yeah, they lost Maxi Gomez, too. But they brought home all their academy kids, and that was kind of romantic in a way. They brought Denis Suarez back. Rafinha was a coup for them to get him in. Iago Aspas is still there. Santi Mina, Bryce Mendez is playing a bigger role. It just hasn't clicked for them yet. I think Fran Escriba is too defensive a manager for a team with that kind of talent that can play a much freer flowing style. It just the manager, I don't think, is the right fit for that team. I think if they get a different coach in there, like not Quique Setién because he'll be too expensive for them, but if they get a different coach in there, then I think they will rise up the table. But for now, it's been kind of a disappointment to watch Celta, and they only got their second win just before the international break against Athletic.
That's all true. It's been a weird season in that sense. I feel like Sevilla deserves a shout out every single year because their team is different every single year, almost from like top to bottom. It's like a fresh team, new 11 players. And it's just remarkable to me how can they can stay consistent and always be strong and always put up a fight. That's just amazing to me. And I think maybe Monchi deserves the most credit for that now that he's back. But it's just remarkable what they're doing.
Yeah, they're fifth. They're probably going to stay fifth because that's what they do. And Machi, just now that he's back, he's the saving grace. He has to put together a new team every year. He lost Ben Yedder and Sarabia this summer. They're arguably their two most important players. And they haven't played that well. They played actually okay against Barcelona, just could not finish any chances. And when you don't finish your chances against Barcelona, 4-0 is what happens. Though they've been okay in points, kind of bad at others, but they're fifth. That's where they're going to be, and they're fine with it.
Yeah. Like, what's interesting to me is who's going to grab the sixth spot, because I don't think Granada is going to be there at the end of the season in the top six, which means it's, to me, because I think Sociedad will be real. I think they're going to be a European spot team.
Yeah.
And so are Sevilla, and obviously the top three. So that leaves Athletic, Valencia, to me, as the two front runners, with maybe an outside shift to others like Villarreal. But I think it'll be interesting who gets that six. And this is the first time in a long time I really feel like 1, 2, 6 in La Liga are actually good enough to, like, you know, do well in the Champions League and the Europa League, kind of like the older days. Mm-hmm. It's been a league with better parity, and it's been more fun to watch, if we're being honest. It's way better like this when you have a bunch of strong teams in the league.
It's been a lot of fun to watch. It was fun to watch last year too. There's been a marked improvement in the past couple seasons, and this year with some of the results we've seen and the performances we've seen. I mean, a Real Sociedad player would never have won Player of the Month in previous years. But you just look at what Odegaard did to teams in September, and it was impossible not to give him that award. He's been brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Yep. That's got to be exciting. If I were in your shoes, that would be pretty damn exciting.
We're very excited. Odegaard, yes. He's become like a cult hero now. He has a huge cult following. I'd like to think we're the flag bearers of the cult. Really impressive. Just, and really not like from a biased point of view. He's just been so good. And I think...
Yeah, objectively.
Both, and I mentioned this on the Man Georgia podcast on Tuesday. It was amazing also watching him from Norway as a 20-year-old. The focal point of the team, and I was on the phone actually with one of his former coaches at Stromsgårdsberg. I don't know how to say that team's name, and he was saying like at the age of 15 he was like the 10. He had the free role, and like he was surrounded by these 20-plus-year-olds who all like just believed in him, and he was the focal point. I just think he has this maturity to him and this composure to him that I think is really impressive. So I'd love to see what his career looks like at like 5 years from now. I just think it's amazing that at the age of 20, he's like a focal point of his national team. That's awesome.
There were people calling him a bust when he was 17 or 18, and that was just wild to me. And now here he is in La Liga, where everyone can watch him, and it turns out he's not too bad. Yeah, he's been a joy to watch. Even when he destroyed Atletico, he was a joy to watch. Just ran rings around our midfield. It was a display. So this weekend, Atleti hosting Valencia. That will be a tough game. I know Valencia are, as they usually are, they're going through it, Keon. They have had a lot of tumult and turbulence with Marcelino going and Albert Salades in as the coach. So Valencia they're always tough oppositions, though, so I'm looking forward to that game. And then Real Madrid go to Mallorca in the late game on Saturday, which you got to think that's a Madrid win, but you never really know.
Yep.
So, yeah, two good games.
Van appeal, but hopefully not.
And then the Champions League in midweek, and we will be back to talk about that when the time comes. All right, Keon, well, that is about all I've got. Anything you want to plug before we go?
Come over to managermadrid.com. If you're a colchonero, you may not have interest, but come over anyway and just see what's going on. And we also have a podcast, obviously, over Managing Madrid, and we run a Spanish football podcast called Churros y Tacticas, which you can also check us out on our network.
Yeah, Churros y Tacticas is awesome. You and Diego do a great job. ManagingMadrid.com and on Twitter at ManagingMadrid. They're really okay guys. I know you may be suspicious, but they're really okay guys. They're pretty cool overall, despite their allegiance. Keon Silvani, thank you so much for joining me on this edition of Colchonero Chat.
All right, thanks, Jeremy.
Has been a pleasure.